This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story. Many distinguished men and women have selected their favorite stories for this series, and we're especially proud to have this week's story selector here in the studio with us. He's our literary advisor on Favorite Story and a very famous figure in the world of books. I dare say you'll find his name on many volumes in your own library. Here he is, author, explorer, editor, world traveler, Mr. George Palmer Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. It's a pleasure to choose a favorite story of my own to be broadcast in this half hour. It's Rudyard Kipling's The Light That Failed. In this favorite story production, ladies and gentlemen, Ronald Coleman will be heard as Dick Heldar, the same role he created for the screen. And co-starring with him are two lovely ladies from motion pictures in the theater, Miss Heather Angel and Miss Edna Best. So here it is. Act One of Rudyard Kipling's The Light That Failed.
My name's Torpenhow. That's a deuce of a name for a man to carry through life with him, isn't it? But most people call me Torp. I'm a war correspondent for a London newspaper syndicate. I've been covering the fighting up the Nile in the Egyptian Sudan. It was there that I met the most remarkable man that I have ever known, Dick Heldar. He was an artist drawing action sketches of the campaign against the Fuzzy Wuzzies. And one night, we were encamped with the Camel Corps out under the desert sky, not far from Khartoum.
Rise into...
Oh, why don't you turn in? Dick, it's past midnight.
Have to finish this picture first.
You work too hard. No newspaper expects a man to send back 10 sketches a day.
I know, but there's so much to draw. Think the column on the march. The star shell bursting over the camp at Berbera. And look at this one, Torp. A soldier lying dead outside Suakin in the moonlight.
They're jolly good sketches, Dick, my boy.
I hope they like them back in England.
Like them? Well, they're fools if they don't. Nobody's ever sent back such pictures as yours. They live, and they move.
Yes, it were nice to have a taste of success, wouldn't it? After all these months of sand gritting in your teeth.
Tell me something, Dick. What are you running away from?
Running away?
Uh-huh. Every Englishman out here on the desert is running away from something. A woman, usually.
No, bad guess, Torp. There's never been any woman in my life. Well, unless it would be Maisie. Yeah, I'd almost forgotten about Maisie.
And who is Maisie?
Just a little girl with pigtails. A proud pug nose with freckles all over it. Maisie and I were brought up together. As orphans. I used to fancy that she and I were in love. I wonder what became of her.
Oh, married to a butcher's boy, no doubt.
Oh, no, not Maisie.
Listen.
Something moving. Out there in the scrub.
It's the Fuzzies.
We're ambushed.
Quick, the camp. They're charging.
Fuzzies, the scrubs are full of them.
Fight on the square, man.
Going to be hand-to-hand, Torp.
It's a bloody business. Here they come.
Yeah.
Look out, Torp. That devil's right on top of you.
Dick, no.
You must go in the kid.
Get away, you brute. Oh, you're hit rather badly, old man. It's a sword cut across the forehead.
Did we throw them back, Torp?
Yes, they won't attack again. You know, you saved my life when that big fellow was rushing down on me and you... Dick. Dick, steady, old man.
Here, stretcher bear up. Over here, give me a hand.
Coming, sir. Coming.
My
careful.
Mind his head.
I'll mind his head, sir. Leave it to me,
Maisie,
sir.
Maisie, where are you, Maisie?
Behold a phenomenon. Here is a man, presumably human, who mentions the name of one woman only. Now, here, Dick, have a sip from my canteen.
Thank you, Maisie.
It was a bad gash, just above the eye. But Dick recovered. And when the war was over, he came back to London to find himself famous. We took lodgings in the same house in London, a rickety affair overlooking the river. And each evening, Dick would take my fox terrier, Binky, for a walk in the park. And it was on one of these walks that the inevitable happened.
Binky! Binky, where the deuce are you, Bink?
Can't find you in this peace soup fog. I beg your pardon, miss.
Yes?
Have you seen a small white fox terrier with a... Maisie.
What?
Well, it is Maisie, isn't it?
How did you know my name?
I'm Dick. Dick Heldar.
Dick? Oh, well, why, this is a surprise.
You've not changed.
Well, nor have you.
I'd have known you anywhere, Maisie. Even in a London fog. How long's it been?
Oh, school days.
Oh, only a few centuries. Where do you live?
Oh, I'm in the Black North, St. John's Wood. I'm very busy.
Oh? What do you do?
I paint a great deal. I've got my own studio.
Do you sell much?
Now and again, not often.
I'm painting, too.
Oh, of course. I've seen your sketches in the papers. The war in Egypt and all those horrid things.
You don't like them, eh?
They seem to be all blood and thunder. Oh, how did you get that scar on your forehead?
Oh, it's nothing. Fuzzy gave it to me in the Sudan. Where can I see you, Maisie?
I'm at 14 Elm Street, but I work every day.
Oh, not on Sundays. I'll come by for tea this Sunday, huh? You can show me your work, and perhaps I can help you.
More tea?
No, thank you, Maisie. No more.
Dick, I wonder if I might show you a canvas of mine.
Yes, I'd love to see one.
It's a fancy head. I call it Melancholia. Here she is. She was a woman, and she'd suffered a great deal, till she couldn't suffer any more. Then she began to laugh at it all, and I painted her. Oh, but, Dick, it won't come.
Melancholia, eh?
Do you like it?
Oh, there's something grim and Dutch about your painting that I like. The color's good, but you want form. And there's bad modeling there. That chin.
Yes, I know, but how can I make it come?
Give up this flashy stuff and drill yourself on line. Line work, that's what you need.
Oh, I hate all that, oh, Dick. I'm selfish. I want success.
Ah, success is nothing. Maisie, the whole thing, lock, stock, and barrel, isn't worth one of the hours we spent together back in the school days. You're alone now, and I'm alone. Come to me instead, darling.
What about my work?
I'll help you, Maisie. You see, I'm still in love with you.
Oh, Dick, be sensible.
You must forgive a man when he's in love. He's always a nuisance. Maisie, come with me. Come across the sea and be happy. I know so many places. Islands you can reach after weeks of crashing through water black as marble. There's a waterfall 300 feet high, like a sliver of green jade laced with silver. And millions of wild bees live up in the rocks. And an ivory white servant will sling you a long yellow hammock. And you put your feet up and hear the bees hum. And the water fall until you go to sleep.
I'd never make you happy, Dick. I'm strange. When we were children together, we had nothing for ourselves. Ever since those days, I've been fighting to get something for my very own.
You need love, Maisie. Someone to care for.
I've tried. Honestly. You're the best friend I have, Dick. But I can't really care for anyone.
Well, love's like line work. Just keep at it long enough and it's sure to come.
Dick didn't tell me much about his meetings with Maisie, but I knew something was wrong. He sloughed his work, forgot his meals, complained of frightful headaches. I'd have given my right arm for Dick if it could help him, but there was nothing I could do. And then one night I found a young girl huddled in the doorway just outside our diggings. She'd fainted from hunger, and I carried her into the house, and I was trying to bring her around in spite of the protests of our fox terrier, Mr. Binkle. Oh, now, see here, Bink. Let's show the lady a few manners, hmm? She's had a hard time.
Hello.
Oh, is that you, Dick? Come in here, will you? Give me a hand with this girl.
Well, for the... Why, Top, the moment my back's turned.
Oh, no. She was lying outside in the cold. She's nearly starved. Hush, Binky.
Bink knows too much about women. Why didn't you turn her over to a policeman?
Well, I haven't your ice water in my veins.
Oh.
Then are you feeling better?
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. There aren't many gentlemen as kind as you are.
I say, turn your face to the light, will you? No, to the light.
Don't let him hit me, sir. Please don't.
No, he's not going to hit you. He's an artist. They're all mad. Do you know what artists do?
Well, they draw things, don't they, on the sidewalk?
No, I've not risen to that yet. Look, what's your name?
Bessie.
Bessie what?
It's no use giving the rest. Bessie Broke, you can call me. Stony Broke, if you like.
All right, Bessie. Now, I'll give you £3 a week just for sitting still and letting me paint your picture.
Hello, this is news.
Yes, I'm going to show Maisie how to do a melancholia, Torp. The real face of sorrow.
What's he talking about?
Marvelous eyes. Terror in them. Futility, despair. Give me a month, Bessie Stonebroke. 1 month and I'll make you immortal.
This is George Palmer Putnam again. Mr. Coleman has just signaled that he's ready to begin Act Two of my favorite story, Rudyard Kipling's famous novel, The Light That Failed. Our stars are Ronald Coleman, Edna Best, and Heather Angel. Now we return to the London studio of Dick Helda for Act Two.
Come on, Bessie, raise your chin a little.
I'm tired, Mr. Elder.
Tired? When all you have to do is sit there like a lady? For shame, Bessie. Come on, head up.
You don't think much of me, do you?
Well, that depends on how you behave.
You treat me like dirt. Mr. Torpenhow don't treat me that way. He makes me feel like a lady. He's a gentleman, Mr. Torpenhow is. Yeah,
he's a bad boy. Now, stop your prattling, Bessie, and keep your head up.
I'd never seen Dick work so strenuously in all my life. The fever of creation was upon him, and Bessie posed from sunrise to dusk. Oh, it was good to see her moving about the rooms as if they belonged to her. It gives a lonely man a sort of hankering. I began to think how nice it would be to have Bessie become a more or less permanent fixture in my life, and I suspect that Bessie was thinking the same thing. But Dick and my own common sense convinced me that it would be better if I went away for a while.
Where's Mr. Torpenhow today?
He's gone away.
You sent him away, didn't you?
Turn your face toward the window, please.
I know you did. Just because he was taking a little notice of me.
If you don't mind, I think we'd better take a little notice of the picture.
Picture? Picture? What do I care about your picture?
Oh, Bessie, I can't do any more today. My eyes are bothering me. You may as well run along home.
You got that headache again?
Yes.
Good. I hope it splits your skull.
That's right, Binky. Say thank you to the lady. Oh, these eyes of mine. Binky, we'll have to see a medicine man. We can't have our eyes interfered with, for by these we get our bread and mutton chop bones for little dogs. What's the verdict, Doctor? My business is painting, and I've no time to lose.
Due to that head wound, you have symptoms of complete degeneration and decay of the optic nerve.
Resulting in?
Blindness.
Blindness.
Under these conditions, there's very little we can do.
How much time do I have?
About a year, if you take care of yourself.
And if I don't?
I really could not say.
Oh, Binky, where was Moses when the light went out? We've got it badly, little dog, just as badly as we can get it. Allah Almighty, help me through my time of waiting, and I won't whine when my punishment comes. That's better. Now, time is short. What can I do? Work. One good piece of work before the night closes in. All right, but what? No more soldiers. Oh, no. Death comes home too nearly, and this is battle and murder both for me. How about the Melancholia? Yes, I've got to finish it. Yes, I can see it now. There'll be Maisie in the picture, because I'll never get Maisie. And Bessie, of course, because she knows all about Melancholia. Although she doesn't know she knows. Yes, and she shall laugh right out of the canvas. That's it. That's it. I can do it now because I have it inside me. Bessie! Bessie, where are you, Bessie? We must work. Come on, hurry before the light goes.
I won't do it.
Come on, get up in the chair, quick. Face toward the windows.
I can hardly stand being near you.
Come on, now throw your head back and laugh.
I won't. I've had enough of this foolishness.
Oh, come on, Bessie. Throw back your head and laugh. Laugh.
I won't.
Laugh, Bessie, laugh.
I can't laugh. I can't.
I'm going to get it out of you if I have to tear it out. Look, it's good. It's so good that I couldn't do it often or I'd consider myself the equal of God and refuse to die at my appointed time. Why, you little fool, I'm giving you a soul on canvas. 100 years from now, they'll be looking at you when you're dust and water and a whisper of the wind, saying, that is sorrow, that is every sorrow. It's sorrow so deep, it's laughter. Come on, Bessie, throw back your head and laugh. Come on, laugh. Laugh, Bessie, laugh. More, more, come on. Laugh.
I'll kill you if you don't let me out of here.
Laugh. Come on, laugh. One more, Bessie. Laugh. Laugh. Laugh.
When I came back to London, I found our lodgings in a shambles. Bessie was on the edge of nervous collapse, and Dick, gaunt and unshaven, was hunched over his canvas on the brink of total blindness.
You see, Top, I had a job of work to do and so little time. But I've done it. And, oh, Top, I'm glad to see you.
Oh, Dick. Dick.
Now, don't say it, Top. Look. Look at the picture.
What a face.
Yeah, I've been down to hell to get her, but isn't she worth it? Isn't it thundering good? Allah Almighty, what couldn't I do in 10 years if I could do this now?
Amen. Yes, she is a beauty. I can feel it.
Yes, so will every man who has any sorrow of his own. He shall see his trouble there, and by the Lord Harry, just when he's feeling properly sorry for himself, he'll throw back his head and laugh, just as she's laughing. Put the life of my heart and the light of my eyes into her, and I don't care what comes now.
That night, after I'd gone to bed, and Dick had collapsed from exhaustion on the couch in his studio, Bessie crept up the stairs to our lodgings. She slipped in the door, pulled the canvas cover off Dick's painting of the Melancholia, and stood back, mocking it.
Laugh, Bessie. Laugh. Laugh.
She emptied a bottle of turpentine onto a dusting rag and wiped it across the face of the canvas, again and again and again, back and forth, until the picture was nothing but a senseless smear of sticky oil.
Laugh, Bessie! Laugh! Laugh!
pity's sake, come here.
What's the matter, Dick? What is it?
Light the lamp, Torp. Quickly. It's so dark.
The lamp is burning. I've just turned up the wick.
I can't see. It's black, quite black. And I feel as if I were falling through it all.
Steady, Dick, steady.
That's right. If I keep very quiet, this darkness will lift. No. No, it won't. My God, I'm blind. And the darkness won't go away.
Lie down, old man, and don't let them think that you're afraid.
Yes, we mustn't let them think we're afraid, must we? All the powers of darkness and that lot. Torp, would you mind letting me hold on to you? One drops through the dark soul.
I could think of only one way, really, to help Dick, and that was to bring him the only woman he'd ever loved. I found Maisie in the north of France, where she was painting hopelessly bad pictures. And a day later, we were back in London. The meeting between Dick and Maisie was strained and quite formal.
Won't you sit down, Maisie? You see, I've had some bother with my eyes.
I know.
What are you doing here in London?
I came to see you.
Oh, that's very kind of you.
Dick, isn't there anything that I can do for you?
Oh, no, there's nothing, thanks.
I'll stay in England to do it if you like.
No, I can get on.
You don't hate me.
I hate you.
Oh, Dick, I'm so desperately sorry.
Oh, no, Maisie. Look, I've a picture to show you. You haven't seen my Melancholia.
Well, let me...
No, it's all right. I can find it by the feel of the frame. Ah, there she is. Ah. What do you think of her?
Why... I can't believe it.
Is it that good? You see what I mean about line work and all that? Stick to line, Maisie.
I see.
You're in it. Do you see yourself?
Yes. I see myself in all my futility.
Well, I think you've looked at it long enough. It's not a thing you can look at too long. It seems to strike everybody that way.
I thought that I'd done the finest thing in the world, bringing Maisie and Dick together again. I was sure it had solved everything, and when war broke out again in the Egyptian Sudan, I signed with the newspaper syndicate to go up the Nile with our troops and cover it. Dick wished me godspeed and assured me that Maisie would take care of his every want. I didn't know that he was lying, that Maisie had gone out of his life forever. When I went to Egypt, Dick was left alone in the darkness, and in the desperation of his loneliness, he sent for Bessie.
What a mess. You may be blind as a barn door, Mr. Elder, but it don't excuse you for looking like a chimney sweep. Oh, I'm sorry for you. I'm that sorry for you.
Thank you, Bessie.
What became of Mr. Torpenhauer?
He went away to the deserts.
Where's that?
Oh, east, out of the mouth of the river. Then south, to the end of the world.
How long have you been like this?
Well, since you left, Bessie. In fact, it happened that night we finished the painting.
Then you never seen it?
What?
After I wiped it out.
You... What? Say that again.
I rubbed it out with turps and the knife.
You...
I was awful angry with you, I was.
Isn't there anything left of it?
You won't hit me, will you?
Hit you? Yes. No. No, let me think. Well, that accounts for Maisie's... She must have thought me mad. Great heavens, to think that a little piece of nothing like you could throw me out of my stride.
I ain't a little piece of nothing, and you got no right to call me that. I did it because I hated you, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry now because, well...
Because... Yes, I know. You didn't know what you were doing, and you don't know what you've done now. Torp would understand, and I saved him from you. Oh, what presumption, what arrogance. Oh, how it serves me right. The Lord is a just and terrible God, Bess, with a very strong sense of humor. Did you ever go to Sunday school?
What are you talking about?
Strengthen me, I pray thee, only this once, and let me die with the Philistines. Now, Bessie, help me pack my things, show me to the bank and to the steamship offices, and then you can see me off at the pier.
Mr. Elder, where are you going?
East, out of the mouth of the river. Then west, then south, then east again. All along the underside of Europe. Then south again to the end of the world.
I saw Dick Heldar once again on the last night of his life. Somehow, in spite of his blindness, he traveled all the way from England to the Egyptian Sudan. And somehow he found his way on camelback to the distant desert outpost where I was quartered. Oh, I saw him coming from afar off, and I could hardly believe my eyes. The scrub was alive with fuzzies, and Dick was a perfect target there in the moonlight. Dick! Dick!
Open how quick!
This way, Dick! Here we are! Hurry, man!
Open how! Hurry!
Get down, man! Get down behind that camel!
Open how!
Dick! Dick! Oh, it's a bad hit. Red, I'll get a doctor.
No, it's all right. I didn't want to be a bother, Torp, but I couldn't stay away.
Oh, Dick, does it hurt you?
No. Oh, Torp, it's good to be alive again. It's good to be...
You've been listening to Rudyard Kipling's The Light That Failed.
We have a guest star on Favorite Story next week, the young man who thrilled you as the little minister with Katharine Hepburn, and as the sergeant in the Broadway hit Voice of the Turtle, Mr. John Beale. He will play The Man Without a Country, a gripping story by Edward Everett Hale, chosen for you by the Theatre Guild's Teresa Helbin. It promises to be another distinguished occasion on our Favorite Story calendar. John Beale in The Man Without a Country. We hope you'll be listening.